Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode. Hope you're having a good day. And I am so proud of myself. This is 3 episodes in a row. Looks like I'm starting to get back on track. So this week, I'm kind of easing myself back in with another interview, but this is a special one. I'm interviewing Dr. Anas Zain of Northern Virginia, and I was taking a seminar in Nashville, non-dental seminar, and Anas came up to me, ran into me, and said, "Hey, you're a dentist, right?" And I go, "Yes, I am." And quite frankly, I was just there to be by myself, and we started having a conversation, and he had mentioned that he had saw me speak somewhere, and you know, he invited me to lunch. He said, "I want to take you to lunch." I said, "No problem, only if I can pay." And he said, "Okay, I'll let you pay." And we went to lunch and we started having this conversation. And it turned out he was from Iraq and he had a phenomenal story. And about halfway through our lunch conversation, I started begging him to record a podcast with me. Because I don't know about you, but what happens to me in my life sometimes is I have what I call RPP, rich people problems. And we forget about where we've been, what other people have gone through, and sometimes we need a reality check. And this lunch with Dr. Anas Zain was my reality check about how good we have it. So I really encourage you to listen to this program and just hear what he has to say. Get a different perspective of what it's like for the foreign dentist who comes to this country and what they went through to get here and what they left behind. And I think it'll give you new and amazing insight into that. I look forward to your comments and your concerns. And as always, don't forget to leave us a review. Don't forget to tell your friends. Don't forget to share this on social media. Don't forget to come to one of my seminars. And so now let's get on to the main part of the podcast episode. Dr. Anas Zain. All right, everybody. I am super excited about today's episode. I'm going to be talking to Dr. Anas Zain from the D.C. area, Northern Virginia. And I'm here at a conference in Nashville, Tennessee, working on setting goal setting and trying to make 2019 a better year for me. And I ran into Dr. Zain, and he was kind enough to say hello to me, which I love when people do that. Because I don't know about you, but don't you hate being at seminars alone?
Yes, yeah. Sure.
But so we went to lunch together and we started talking about his background and his story. And I just think so much of who we are and what we become is about our story, our life story. And Dr. Zain is a dentist from Iraq, moved to the U.S. in 2007, I believe.
That's correct.
And just had such a fascinating time at lunch that I told him we would have to share it on a podcast. And like most people, he gave me a list of 10 excuses at least. And then I think even this morning he was hoping I wouldn't show up.
I was praying for that.
Yeah. So welcome, Dr. Zane. How are you doing?
Thank you so much. No, it's actually my honor, really. Yeah. I really appreciate your time and the wonderful conversation we had yesterday and all what you've been giving to the dental community.
Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate that. It means the world to me. So listen. Where I want to start is I want to spend some time talking about life in Iraq.
Yes.
It's not very often. And as an immigrant, you know, it's definitely fascinating to me. But I think sometimes one of the things that we're guilty of, especially this time of year,
yes,
is we want to micro complain about the little things. You know, you know, I told you yesterday I was having breakfast with my mom about 5-6 years ago, and I was complaining about something, right?
Sure.
And I said, Mom, how did you handle this? And she just had this smirk and this look on her face. She said, Son, I don't think you understand. When I was your age, I was worried about surviving.
Yes.
I wasn't worried about who's picking up my clothes and, you know, all of these things. And I think you can give some fresh perspective on this, and I also think it's just good for us to learn about other cultures. So let's talk about it. So talk to me about Iraq.
Well, actually, you know, I left Iraq. That's probably more than 11 years ago, 2007, and I can tell you, I was born in 1980. So, talking 1980 to 1988, there was a war
Between Iraq and Iran.
And Iran, exactly. Still. Prosperous life and a lot of money, and people travel. One Iraqi dinar is like $3, so good life. But still war. I mean, you have your relatives and everyone is just, you know.
Was it a war the way we think of it, where there's consistent bombing? Because that's what I think of Middle East wars.
No, in with Iran, it wasn't like that because it was all on the border.
Okay.
So you don't see that every
so
now and then.
So it didn't affect your day-to-day from a safety perspective.
Correct. Okay. Correct. You go to school, your dad is not there. He comes back every 3 to 6 months, say hi for 2-3 days, and disappears again.
Like a typical military family.
Typical. Every single one.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes. And then,
so your dad was in the military?
He was.
Okay.
Not because he was an officer or anything, but you have to join.
Everybody's.
I have to. Yes. Okay. That's like 1955 to 1965. All of you, every single male have to join. Otherwise you get executed.
Okay.
Yes.
And this is still, it's under what we call tyranny, but it's still with Saddam Hussein.
That's with Saddam Hussein.
Okay.
And then after that, from 88 to 90, 91, 90, it was a good life. Mm-hmm. Was no
better
wars.
Than the first 80s, early 80s?
Yes, yes.
Because now you're out of war.
Out of war, things are good, and the country is growing. But again, you go back to that personality that, you know, resist going in peace. The theme loves war. So every time you choose a president, you expect the theme that comes with it.
Right. But you choose a president.
He chose us. Yeah. 1990, you know, the Kuwait thing. And I don't want to go in details with that, but I just want to say how 1991, the war was very, very different. Now, you don't have electricity, you don't have communication, every single building, government building. They're all gone. And rockets everywhere across the street.
And we were living in Baghdad.
I was living in Baghdad.
So you're in the center of it.
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah, we went to a city here and there just trying to avoid Baghdad for a few days. But then we went back and it was, I'm sorry to say it, but it was hell.
Yeah.
Really, literally. Literally. It's like a few miles from you. I mean, but it was very targeted. You know, very focused.
Yeah, but still it disrupts life.
It does. It does. Bombing.
Did you go to school during this time? I mean,
no.
No.
No. From, I think it was January to, I think, March, I think, 1991, we didn't go. Then we went in deep darkness for more than a year. I think it was more than a year. I'm so sorry. I'm trying to remember dates.
That's okay.
So if it's not very accurate, people might say, oh, it was less. But it was...
It felt like years and years.
Not even a government building, not even a building has an electricity. I mean, It felt so weird after 6-9 months. You see a light. Oh my God! It's not like today's generators and everything. Right. So you have nothing. You are in the darkness.
So what you're saying is, after the first Gulf War,
yes,
after that ended,
yes,
for roughly a period of a year, you were without electricity.
That's correct.
Like, when you say without electricity, you're talking about living like in the 1700s.
Yes. Yes.
You candles.
You bake everything. You try to cook using
bake
whatever.
Bake fire, I would assume.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have some oil here and there and gas, but they're just very, very scarce. Yeah.
What about running water, things like that?
You have that.
You have that.
You have that.
Okay.
You have that. Yes. So the lesson from that, I mean, other than 1 year, now we're talking about productivity.
Right.
We get upset when we don't have a Wi-Fi for 2 minutes here.
Yeah.
And we complain about it. And then let's take the other aspect of that from 1991 to 1997, probably, you're talking about sanctions. So you're not only
And that's something I think 99% of people listening don't even understand. We understand what sanctions are. We don't understand the effect it has to those that are under sanctions.
And I'm trying to just not to complain here.
Right.
And not to talk about history as I want to get some lessons from all that. Even for me, when I forget, when you hear the term sanctions and this and that, you need just to go a little bit deeper and say, what kind of sanctions are these? Mm-hmm. Because for 6-7 years, people were dying from hunger and illnesses. No medicines, no food, no bread, no nothing. People are passing out just because they don't have food. And it was just very tough years. I don't want to put it in a different way. I just say, so you are just watching, you know.
You're just trying to survive.
You try to survive, and then for the globe, for everyone internationally, you are watching a country dying. Kids are dying. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. It's true, because you don't have the basic things that you need. It was just a very, very tough decision to let this country go through with until 97, when they allowed the country to sell some oil and get some food. That was a
so
good
you're
relief.
In high school during this time, basically.
I think middle school and
middle,
high school.
Middle school,
yes.
And high school.
Yes.
So how did that affect your education? How did that affect kind of your dreams and everything?
I'm trying to remember all that. So you're asking me, and I think I should have documented all that, honestly. But seriously, because it's a very important time of my life. To be very honest, we got good education.
Okay.
And then it was because it's the basic things. We still have some good teachers who graduated from different countries and came to Iraq, and they're still teaching us well. The only problem, I don't think we had really big dreams at all. It's a survival mode. It is. So because of that, when I see people talking about big dreams and planning for 5-10 years, I really needed to train myself to do this. We were on survival mode for a very, very, very long time. So what happens, you stop dreaming big. And you need to be very realistic, and you want to survive. And that's it. So when I see people here commit suicide, I never understood that back then. I was like, why? Because we were busy, as your mom said, surviving. I mean, I'm busy in getting gas to cook and oil to for heat and busy with different things
and growing bread.
And bread and growing things in your yard so you can get some vegetables and fruit and yeah.
So there's scarcity, rationing.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. But through this, your family survived.
Definitely, yes.
Okay, and so 97, things started turning around.
Yes, yes. 97 got a little bit better. Excuse me, I joined dental school in 98, and things started getting a little bit better.
But because the sanctions were ending.
They weren't ending. They were allowed just some food and medicine.
Exactly. Sanctions were relieved.
Yes.
Okay, updated.
Yes, yes, yes.
I apologize. I don't want to come across as being not empathetic to what's going on.
No.
But it's very new to me. Even as an immigrant, you know, I came from a country where we didn't experience any of these sanctions things like that and wars,
yes.
You know. So
So just for fun to interrupt, sorry,
that's okay.
Like dental school, we're using, because it's still, it's 2001, and we're still using, you know, zinc phosphate cement that was expired in 1992.
So, you know, so I don't mind you using zinc phosphate cement because I was using that in dental school. I graduated in 99.
Yes.
But I'm pretty sure it didn't expire in 10 years, talking about 10 years old.
At least, yeah.
It just goes to show, I don't think those expiration dates really mean anything. What was your experience at dental school like?
Dental school, we had two groups of people. I mean, people who graduate are from England and mainly England. Those are really good teachers, wonderful. But still the resources. You're talking about books that are really old. I mean, the country didn't buy any books since probably 1991 when the sanctions started. So you don't have books. You don't have, you know, teachers are not going out to travel get educated well.
So there must be no concept of CE.
Outdated. No concept of CEs and all that, no.
And what type of dentistry were we doing in dental school? I mean, what kind of dentistry was going on in the country so that you could learn in dental school?
It's all crisis management dentistry, seriously.
I like that word. It's crisis management. That word.
Dentures, extractions, and large amalgams and root canals, if they can't afford it. And, you know, some crowns here and there, but it's just not very fancy stuff. Of course, some people were doing ortho, some people were doing some, but not as today's dentistry. I mean, it's just big difference. People couldn't afford it. Couldn't.
If you're confused about how to grow your practice, then you need to hear the rest of this message. Listen. The ways of the 1980s and the 1990s simply do not work anymore. You have to be different. And the way to be different in today's competitive environment is not doing more of the same thing that everybody else is doing, but adding new services to your practice. If you're looking for a solution that's logical, practical, and full of business tips to how to implement strategies into your practice to add new services, then you need to look at my company, 3D Dentists. We provide fantastic training that will help you grow your practice by adding new services to your existing patient base. If you want to learn more, all you got to do is visit www.3d-dentists.com and look around and see what's right for you. If you have any questions, don't ever hesitate to reach out to me. Now, let's get back to our show.
So, you graduated dental school in 2003?
2003.
Okay. What'd you do after that?
Well, when you graduate from dental school, you have to go and do a residency for a year. And then, according to your rank in dental school, then they will decide where you're going to practice. So, I was practicing after the 1 year of residency, very close to Baghdad as well, in a health center that was missing any basic needs or any basic dental need that you really need to treat people.
Do dentists make good money in Iraq at this
they
time?
They do.
Let now, me define how much is good. No, I'm talking about that time.
That time compared to people. Okay. Well, talking about sanctions time, you're talking people were making $10 to $30 a month. That's it. That's what you get from the government. And then after that, you go to work for your private practice, and then you can get $200-$300 a month from your private practice. That's more than enough. I still remember, and that's another lesson here, when we look at any crisis and we try to donate money and we become, even myself, become a little bit greedy, and I say, should I really donate for that? Or I want the listener, if they just listen to this part, my cousin... his dad was visiting Iraq back then, and then he came to us and he said, "Your nephew was talking to my mom. Sent a gift with me. It was either $50 or $100. That was more than enough for us to live for 2 months with this money. You just run to the store and you buy some meat because you haven't." You know, in meat for a very, very long time. So when you look at your $50 in your pocket and you go and you buy, you know, some, you know, chips and Subway or whatever. And you need to think that there is another family somewhere in the world that can survive for a month or two on this $50. And we are still reluctant to give $10 donation to these countries. Or,
you know, I think sometimes, and I don't want to dwell on this a little bit, but I think sometimes, speaking for myself, I think the reluctance is not our unwillingness to give or my unwillingness to give, but more because I'm afraid that it's going to be used incorrectly. In a terrorist way, but more like I'm going to give you 10 and 5 cents of it is going to go to the people I'm trying to help. And everybody, and then from bribery to corruption, everything else is going to be used that way.
Yeah, I mean, because of that, you use the right organizations. And, you know, I use, you know, the UN organizations a lot, Red Cross. They're kind of trustworthy people.
Kind of.
Because you have 20, 30%, 40% going to management people. Yeah. They're still trimming it. And but you know, it's better than nothing.
So a typical family could live on a couple of $100 a month easily.
Oh, yeah.
That's luxurious.
That's a good life.
That's a good life.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a good life.
That's a good life.
All right, so you got out of dental school. You were doing whatever it is you're doing. You're making $30 a month.
Oh, well, but after 2003, probably you're making $200 a month.
But that's between government and private.
No, just government. Government. Things start changing after 2003.
Okay.
Yes, now they're making thousands of dollars these days, just to be clear. But back then it was like two.
But even thousands of dollars at the end of the day is not a lot of money.
Yes.
But everything costs less. I mean, at the end of the day, when your overall wages are low for a country, then your labor is low, and so your money goes farther. It's simple economics there. All right. So now let's kind of transition to did you dream to come to the U.S.? How did this transition from a dentist in Iraq to dentist in the United States happen?
Well, I never dreamt of coming to the U.S., to be very honest. I come from a very a medical family. I mean, my grandfather was a medical doctor, graduated from England. Four of my uncles are medical doctors, four. So the mindset that we had, you stay in the country, you serve, you help, you serve this country. You were born here. But from 2003 to 2007... we lost many lives.
So just to also put this in perspective, this was after 9/11, 2001. The government of the United States decided to go into war with Iraq.
That's correct.
Probably for something they really didn't have much to do with.
I mean, I will say yes, but at the same time, 95% of people weren't understanding anything. I mean, we weren't involved in any of that.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode. So 2003 to 2006 was a very difficult time.
Very difficult time.
Worse than the 90s?
Probably 10 times.
Okay. So from based on our conversation from yesterday, what I would say the 90s were bad economically.
With one dictator.
With one dictator. But the late mid-2000s were bad economically and safety-wise.
That's correct. And people probably heard this many times. 2003 came, and I'm being very honest with you. I was very happy. I mean, Saddam Hussein, I was not. If you hear from someone telling you he was a good person, he was not at all. And I was so
but
happy.
But he kept the country stable.
Yes. In you know, as we were talking about North Korea and some other, you know, Gaddafi and all these. He kept it, yes. And
you don't have to worry about dying on the streets.
Exactly. When it comes to, now it's changing that I can't trust my neighbor anymore. That's a very, very scary situation. When you have one street, you have 10 lives were lost in I live on that street, and it probably 10 lives were lost, or young, kidnapped, tortured, and killed. That's not a good life.
Okay. And that wasn't by the United States.
You, what do you mean by the United
Tortured?
No, that was...
This is all like infighting, basically.
Exactly. No, the United States, they opened, they came and they tried to, okay, we have this model, we're going to force it. And this is the other lesson. Change doesn't come from outside. For all of us, change comes from within. People weren't ready for that. So they started killing each other for different reasons. So it's sectarian things between old Iraqis. 99% of the killing happened between Iraqis.
Things that Saddam was able to keep in control by an iron fist, basically.
Definitely.
By just pure fear.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Now the door's open. You have many dictators. You have many militias. And you don't trust...
There's no leadership.
No.
It's a free-for-all.
It is. Again, survival mode at the highest level.
So now we're not talking about just economic survival. Now we're talking about literally you have to be worried that if you leave your house, or even if you stay in your house, you might be...
Even in your house.
Be taken.
Yes. Yes.
Are you married at this time?
I was married.
Do you have kids at this time?
I had... my daughter was born in 2005. My second... 2007, my brother was kidnapped, tortured, and killed from his school. He was kidnapped and he was 20 years old. His name is Bilal. And then my son was born probably 1 or 2 months after his him being passed away and killed. So I gave my son the same name. And again, after that, why I became kind of a pro-peace person, because you can't predict what wars would bring to you. I mean, one of the things that every time I go through hardship in dentistry or something, I just look at I try to not even look, just remember my brother and say, I mean, remember all these hardships that you're going through them. This is nothing compared to what he went through and losing your life. So you're blessed 10 times that you survived. And now you're worried about this bad review and that implant that failed and that employee that... It's just really it's like what is this? Can you believe that? You came from there. You thank God for that. However, my son was born and then I couldn't even take my wife to the hospital. It wasn't safe. So he was born in my house. We brought someone, and then it's like in the 50s.
Probably in the 1800s, quite honestly. Yes. You had electricity during this time,
yes,
though.
You have money, you have electricity, you have food. You don't have...
But what's happening to the economy? I mean, so much of our lives are so dependent, at least here in the U.S.,
yes,
it, for you as well now. Mm-hmm. I mean, our lives are dependent on our income source, and the income source is dependent on the economy. So I can't imagine what would happen to our economy if we went into this type of turmoil.
Remember, Iraq is floating on that oil lake, mm-hmm. literally. Sell oil, give money to people, that's it. Build nothing. So going back to 2003, I mean, when I was there and I saw Saddam Hussein leaving, I said, "Ooh, that's great." But then a few weeks after, I realized, "Ooh, the country is going in the wrong direction." Still, we have
that
money
that quickly.
Few weeks, Iran and people are coming from different countries, and no repairs, no nothing, and sectarian things started. So I realized, oops, we opened the door for different things now, and we are not just prepared. We're not. So we led a war, and the intention probably for some was good. Okay, I'm going to get rid of Saddam Hussein, and I don't want to irritate people, to go deep in that. But still, people here weren't ready for the next move. And they thought, oh, we're going to make it just another U.S. It never happened. People weren't ready.
It rarely does happen, it seems like. I'm not trying to be political, but, you know. If you've taken sleep apnea training to only get back to your practice and not be able to reap the benefits, then you need to listen to this message. I've teamed up with Dr. Aaron Elliott, and we provide a level one sleep training that's focused on implementation. It's not focused on all the science. It's not focused on all the things that could possibly go wrong or go right. It's focused on how do I get my team on board and how do I make this a part of my practice that's not complicated. So, if you're looking for sleep apnea training that just gets you started, that's down to business, that's not full of any fluff, then you need to take a level one implementation program. You can find out more by visiting www.3d-dentists.com and look for our sleep apnea implementation program. We look forward to seeing you at a seminar soon. So, okay. All right. So things were bad.
Yes.
Is this what caused you to want to leave?
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's, again, that
had you been started thinking about this, or was it like literally a one day decision that it's time for me to go?
It's after I lost my brother and 10 people who are, some of them are my relatives. I thought it's not, the odds are not going to work for me. It's not a good life, and it's the time to leave. So probably took me 2 months after I lost my brother. I prepared things and I left.
Okay. And you were ready to start a new life in the U.S.?
See, yes, I got here, and then after I got here, you are traumatized from losing a brother, and you're starting a new life, and I'm dentistry in my mind, but still that wounds, you know, all these wounds inside you, they didn't heal. So I started listening to some spiritual people and Wayne Dyer and go through this and that. I couldn't look at my brother's pictures for years until now. It needed probably some therapy for me that I never did, because you're leaving, you know, and my wife didn't join me until, you know, 1 or 2 years after that. And I'm leaving my wife.
So your wife stayed in Iraq in all this danger.
In Jordan and Syria. So between these two.
Well, those places aren't much better.
Yeah. Yeah. Her family was there. So it just left her there. Okay. And until I can bring her with two kids.
Yeah.
My son was 2 months old and my wife is really young. And it was, you know, you would wake up some days and cry. And
yeah.
Yeah. You know, we made it through.
Yeah, we find a way when we have the will.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm going to fast forward us a little bit.
Yes.
So once, you know, typical immigrant story, once you come to the U.S., you have to do some type of residency here.
Yes.
1 year, 2 year, 3 year, depending on the state, depending on the school. Then you chose to do a residency in the state of Washington for another year. And then you decided to move to Northern Virginia.
When I first came to the States, I was in Northern Virginia.
Okay.
Because of some of my relatives
yeah.
and went to Florida, then Washington State, then I came back to Fredericksburg.
Okay, and so now you're ready to start your new dental career.
That's correct.
Do you think you were at a yesterday we talked a little bit about the disadvantage you felt, not like in an angry way, but like you're literally learning how to think differently than
yes.
everybody here.
Yes, because now it's a new culture. Mm-hmm. It's a new mindset. And for 27 years, you're behind in every single aspect of your life. You know, spiritual, you're talking intellectual, you're talking dental, you're talking financial. You're behind. You haven't read, you haven't, you know. So now you have to catch up.
I want to emphasize this. You don't have access.
Definitely.
I mean, you don't have access to read. I mean, you probably didn't have the internet the way we have the internet.
Yeah.
You probably didn't have economics the way we have economics. You know, you're worried about getting killed when you walk on the street. The last thing you're worried about is, hey, I need to learn how to place composites, you know.
Sure.
And when you did have access, it was to very old materials, 1980s textbook, 1980s thinking. And to go back to what we said earlier, you had to learn to dream.
Yes. Yes, so I trained myself and I started following. But this is the mistake that I did, and we were talking about that even yesterday. The biggest mistake that I'm stopping myself now and say, stop it. You shouldn't do this. That you follow what everyone is doing. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest mistake ever. You have to learn from, you know, those wonderful minds. But at the same time, you have to have your plan, because you will end up, okay, I'm gonna work as a dentist. I'm gonna practice dentistry. I'm gonna buy a practice, second practice, third, fourth. Where are we going?
You know, I call that, and it's my theme. I have a word for 2019 personally,
yes.
And that theme is hashtag clarity. For me, it's so easy to get caught in these traps when you're not clear about who you are, what you are, and why you are. And I think it's an important exercise. I mean, that's ultimately why we're here,
yes.
You know,
yes.
Is to gain some level of clarity. So let's talk about dentistry now.
Yes.
Okay. So you were working as an associate, I assume?
In a corporate, yes.
Okay. What was that like?
It's it was tough.
What was tough about it?
Okay. You don't have the freedom that you want. Second,
but you're not used to freedom.
That's correct. Yes. But I came to the U.S. to gain
I'm
my
sorry.
Freedom.
No, I'm
you're
sorry.
True. You're right. But
we should be able to do what we want with you.
It's like a slavery thing. You see 30, 40 patients a day. And I'm one of those, you know, people pleasers. And I go home and I don't feel good, and I try to do my dentistry right, and you're forced by productions and numbers, and the culture was, I mean, again, culture. We this term kept repeating itself again and again. I mean, I have no clue what the turnover is high, and it's all about money, but you put different labels and things. So we're just, I wasn't happy at all. I was thinking of leaving dentistry.
And after you worked so hard to get here to
yes,
be a dentist.
Yes.
I mean, how bad, I want perspective. How bad must it be that a person who left a war zone, moved to another country, left his wife and kids for 2 years, went through all this struggle, that it was so bad that you wanted to not be a dentist?
Yeah. Yes. Well, it happens again and again and again when we chase dreams that are not our dreams.
Yeah, when you don't chase your own.
Yes, yes. Yeah, they're just written by someone else. So with that pushed me hard. And as Dan Sullivan says, all what you need, courage and ignorance. I had them both.
Yeah.
I went and purchased a practice, fee-for-service practice. Was a good...
How much research did you do into this?
Yeah, close to zero.
Okay. You were just so distraught,
yes,
that you just wanted to buy something.
Yes, yes.
Okay,
and I did it. So it's my practice.
But
now.
How many practices did you look at? I mean, there must be dozens for sale.
Yes, but I was looking for. I mean, I had some knowledge. Some people helped me here and there, but still, they told me demographic, fee for service practice. Then I realized a little bit later that it's a holistic practice. It's not the same mindset.
And by the way, did you know what holistic meant?
Come on, you don't want to embarrass me.
No, but I mean...
No.
No,
no. I mean
holistic doesn't exist in India and Iraq and
yes,
all these places.
And it's still...
I mean, we grow our food in our backyard. It's organic by nature.
All organic, that's yeah. correct. We'll see, even if you know the term holistic,
yeah,
that's fine. It's we still want that. We all want natural and organic mm-hmm. and all that. And we, it's not a bad life at all. I'm not... But I didn't realize the school of thought that comes with it.
Right.
I didn't
and the patients that,
exactly,
come with it.
Exactly. So I was, you know, oblivious about all that. So just.
So to help people understand. So, and I'm not trying to be racial at all here. You bought a white man's practice.
That's correct.
You know, who was probably very white. Okay. And here you are, a Middle Easterner.
Correct.
You're an Iraqi.
Yes.
You have an accent.
That's correct.
You bought a holistic practice, and you don't quite understand what a holistic is.
Fee-for-service.
Fee-for-service is probably a bigger issue along the way. Yeah. So what happened to this practice that you bought?
Well, he was very kind and generous and stayed with me for a year, and then he said, I'll help you in any way I can. He really wanted to help me and support me, and still a very, very kind man. But this is the thing. Your patients will come and say, what the hell are you doing here? I mean, seriously. I mean, he's like, who is this? I mean, completely different face and background. And so now you have to convince them that I do really good dentistry and I really care about you. How to deliver this message, and you just don't have the talent to do that. So it was just a big jump, but I thank God. We probably kept, I would say probably 60%.
So your practice dropped by 40%.
Not right. And this is another lesson. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen right away. People keep coming back and testing and saying, okay, what are you giving me? What's the different thing that you're going to give me? I used to come here and pay a lot of money for this man. And this is the thing that when people try to convince you to buy a practice, fee-for-service, that's a great practice. It's not. Because if you come with a PPO mindset, that's not a good practice for you. If you don't know why it's a fee-for-service practice, it's a fee-for-service for a reason. Either the way they deliver, either they trusted this older dentist. Even if his dentistry is different from your dentistry, they trust him. They want him. They love him. They're ready to pay him full. Different philosophy of a practice, holistic. So why did they pay the full fee? And you all of a sudden you come, and then you're surrounded by 50 dentists, and you say, oh, I'm gonna thrive. You are not. I'm sorry to say that, unless you're going to deliver something. You're going to
go above it. You're going to go above and beyond what the previous person was doing.
Of course. Of course. Or you follow the same.
You have to keep. You have to give people a compelling reason to stay.
Yes.
All right. So your practice dropped by 40% over a 1 or 2 year period.
That's correct.
Now what?
Now
you have stress and pressures.
Stress. And then the other mistake that I did, I heard people talking about this a lot. I was like, team building. It's like, why am I team? If I want to praise someone, I didn't understand that. I didn't realize until recently that your team is the key for everything. If you hire the right team. So I was just on survival mode for a few years.
But you're used to that.
I know. Coming back to survival mode. I mean, well, again, seriously, it's a mindset.
Yeah.
Again, if you're not ready to get rich, if you're not ready to grow, if you're not ready, the limitation, the barriers are still in your mind.
Partly you might think you're never destined for that even.
I know. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
We can believe that.
Yes, we can.
Or we can believe that, oh my God, from where I am, this is great. But where you could be is even greater.
That's correct.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into Full Arch Implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3ddentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
Don't let other dentists on social media tell you that medical billing simply doesn't work, because they're wrong. I can tell you from personal experience and from experience of hundreds and thousands of dentists that we've helped put this into practice that it can work. Now, medical billing isn't easy. Medical billing isn't hard. Medical billing is very specific. No one is going to give you money without having you play the game the way they need you to play it. And that's why I've teamed up with Mr. Hooten Shahidi of Code Medical Billing, who specializes in medical billing for dentists only, to provide 1-day and 2-day seminars and workshops to implement medical billing ethically into your practice. If you're looking for a 1-day training that are held throughout the country, or 2-day hands-on workshops, which are held in Raleigh, North Carolina, all you got to do is attend one of our programs held by 3D Dentists by visiting www.3d-dentists.com and get in the game of medical insurance billing and see how it can help your practice. Now, let's get back to the show.
All right, so now we have to make changes in our practice. What are some advice? What changes have you made? What's worked? What hasn't worked?
I'll try to make it brief because I can talk forever, as you know. I would just say,
but I enjoy it.
Thank you so much. I hope your listeners
they will trust me.
The major mistakes that I did. Number one, fee for service practice. You need to dissect every single aspect of that and know why it's a fee for service, and see if you can deliver the same mindset, same ideas, same dentistry that the previous dentist did. Number one. Number two, I wasn't flexible enough to offer some other things. Like, you know what, I'm gonna go accept some insurances. I'm gonna file for you. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna do that. It took me 2 years until I went to unlock the PPO and negotiate the fees and do this and do so. Okay, stay here. And then the dental savings plan helped me from day one. And I thank Chris Phillips for all that, because he talked to us about it, and I offered it, and it kept many people probably in my practice. But didn't hire the right team member. I didn't hire many. I just, you know, said, okay, leave it as it is. Took another bad advice from some people. Please don't do it. You don't have to hire a hygienist. Do your hygiene. This is the most ridiculous advice that I've ever...
So people told you that you can save money by doing your own hygiene.
Yes. And my hygienist was retiring, cutting days. I will do all the hygiene. Just by hiring a hygienist, a good hygienist, and hiring some team members who know the... Production went 30-40% in 2-3 months. Okay? And of course, I was facing a lot of, you know, fears. Yeah. And a lot of, like, implant and ortho and some, you know, big procedures. I took all the courses. I became, you know, CE junkies, but I'm not implementing.
Yeah.
And I'm just afraid. So I just decided, you know what? You know, courage over comfort. That's it. This is the thing that I thank David Maloli for that. He kept repeating that. He's such a wonderful man. But it just fear facing you everywhere. And then when you just become confident and start doing the procedure, oh my God, and just that's easier than what I thought. And of course, coaching and these seminars and great people like you and some other friends who really helped me. Unconditionally, they just said, you know what, we're gonna extend our hand and just help you and as much as we can. Not like, oh, this guy, he came with this package, it's a messy package, let's stay away from him. Many wonderful people helped me during this journey.
And where do you think your practice is now compared to where you want it to be?
I think it's growing. I think it's team culture, mindset, all right, you know, skills and procedures, and I think we're on track. I think I am very satisfied with where I am now. I think I'm still growing, but I think compared to the last 2 years, I probably, you know, it's 100% progress, really.
So to put into perspective a little bit, you bought a practice that was doing X, and today you're doing more than X, correct?
Of course.
And you had got, during that time, you'd started here, you dropped down 40%, and then you climbed back to the where you were to break even, you know, in terms of what you bought it for, and then now you're above and beyond that.
That's
and that. The trajectory is looking positive moving forward.
It does. It does. Yeah. And it's a very competitive area. And many
Northern Virginia is unbelievably competitive.
And there's the other thing. Many people would come to you and tell you, respect the demographic. I mean, you are 1 to 400 or 300. It's not a home run place for you. And you say, ah, they know nothing.
Yeah.
And you decide to do it anyway. Which is,
I tell that to people. Like I said, you know, our market, Raleigh, North Carolina, is a great market. Just don't move on to our street corner. There's already 10 of us there.
Oh, my God.
I mean, can you do well? No. Sure.
But
how long is it going to take, and how hard are you going to work, and how much stress are you going to put yourself in? You know, this is, you know what I think makes immigrants successful overall is they were willing to go where most people didn't want to go. They're willing to go 30, 40, 50 minutes outside of the city and work in smaller towns where the opportunities were generally greater.
That's correct.
You know,
that's correct.
And that's what, at least what I've seen from my parents' generation. You know, our generation, you know, I'm essentially second generation.
Yes.
I moved here when I was two. You know, we're enamored with being in the city.
Yes.
You know,
yes. And then add to that, definitely what you said, and add to it is failure is not an option. Because now we have a very strong, you know, you're familiar with that. You have a very strong family relationships, mm-hmm. and a friend. So you have your parents and cousins and friends and all asking you, how is your practice doing?
Yeah.
So you can't report back saying,
The social pressures.
Of course. So you work 8 days a week just to make it work.
Yeah. What's your number one challenge?
That's a very deep question. I really need to think about that.
Well, as it relates to your practice.
I will say focus and discipline.
Okay.
Yes, stay focused.
So what I'm hearing from you based on today's conversation and yesterday's lunch is it's a problem that many of us have, and that is, excuse me, we have a tendency to get enamored by the grass is greener on the other side.
Yes.
You know, why do I not have four practices? Why do I not have $5 million practice? Why am I not driving this fancy car? And we were chasing magic bullets. And I think that leads to the lack of focus and lack of discipline.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I really, the last piece of wisdom is this. I mean, we are chasing a dream after dream. Look at me. This immigrant who was living on $50 a month, came to the U.S., did everything, opened a practice, owned a practice, hired 5, 6, 7 team members, making this amount of money. Ask me about contentment. Ask me about contentment. Because of that, I need to go back and to this contentment gratitude list very, very, very often and count my blessings. Because your mind would just tell you that's never enough. You give me $10 million. Go to the dentist who are making $10 million. Are they happy? They want the $20 million. Yeah. Go to the $50 million. Are they happy?
I remember I told myself, if I could just get to $800,000, I'll be happy.
Right?
You know, if I could just get to $1 million, I'll be happy.
You get there. You're never happy.
Never happy.
So we you come. I came from Iraq, and some days you say, oh, I miss these days. And you are in Iraq, and you say, I wish I'm in the U.S. And you own a practice, and then you say, oh, my God, I wish I worked for a corporate. You work for a corporate. You say, I wish. It's just contentment. You're rich. You say, oh, big responsibility. You're poor. You look at rich people. It's always contentment game. If we don't play it right, we will never be happy for the rest of our life.
Ennis, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Welcome to our country. 11 years later. And I say our country because it is our country.
It is a great country.
It is a great country.
It is.
You know, flaws and all.
Seriously.
Scars and all. It's a great place to live. And I wish you the best of luck. You have such a heart. And I encourage you to, you would talk. I think you should, all immigrants should write a book.
I think.
Not a book like this fancy book. Even if it's just like small stories. Because there's so much for us to learn. And I think it's perspective. And it was awesome.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks, Ennis.
Have a wonderful day.